It's a whole new blue.
Broadcasting live from the KSHP studios in the heart of Las Vegas, Nevada.
It's time to get on the right side of sports betting. It's time for the Odds Couple.
Welcome to the Odds Couple on KSHP AM 1400 radio right here in beautiful Las Vegas, Nevada. Simulcast on Vegas Video Network. We're live and worldwide. My name is Scott Pritchard. I'm a professional sports bettor handicapper featured on VegasInsider.com. Also my own site, PritchardsPicks.com. And effective this week, former NBA referee Tim Donaghy reached out to me. He has a sports betting website. I am now one of the featured handicappers on his site. Check that out at refpicks.com. I'm joined, as always, by a very good friend, general manager here at KSHP AM 1400 Radio in Las Vegas, Brett Grant. Happy Wednesday.
It's a happy update to you.
Let me turn my microphone on. That would probably help, wouldn't it? Hey, happy hump day to you there, Scott. How you doing?
Doing great.
Not only am I that, I'm also apparently in charge of the board, and I don't know what I'm doing.
Too many responsibilities. Exactly. It's not enough to get your insight on sports. You have to run the control board as well.
I was enamored by the sunshine today, and I had to check what the weather was going to be. And it's not quite a Chamber of Commerce day. It's going to be a little cool today in Las Vegas. But always something to wager on, and always a great day in Las Vegas from a gambling sports or gambling perspective.
We're going to get started with What Say You? Tracy McGrady. Boy, talk about a blast from the past. This guy was a star in the National Basketball Association for years, was a very good player for the Houston Rockets. I believe he's 33 years old. He tried out for the San Antonio Spurs this past summer. They said thanks, but no thanks. He went over to China, played in their basketball league, had a good year, 56% shooting for the entire season, 25 points per game. He was just signed by the San Antonio Spurs. I feel that this is a good move for the Spurs. What say you?
Well, you know, they got rid of Steven Jackson, so obviously this is the roster spot they had a hole in to go out and fill and then go out and bring in Tracy McGrady, T-Mac as he was. He averaged, 5 points a game in 16 minutes a year ago in Atlanta in Chinese basketball. He was 25 points a game in China, came back. So apparently he's got his game back confidence-wise. The issue might be, can Greg Popovich get him into and integrated into that system to be effective? McGrady's a guy with an ego. He's used to being a star, used to having the ball, and that's not what San Antonio needs. They need a steady influence off the bench to help with their depth because they've got injury issues. They got a hole to fill. Getting a grizzled veteran, I like that idea. But McGrady's got to be sold on his role, and if he's not able to acclimate to his role, then it could be a disaster.
The reason that Steven Jackson, a proven winner, was let go was because of personality issues or just a lot of negativity, some attitude problems with that team. So I guess the question is, knowing that Tracy McGrady in the past has been a very good player in the National Basketball Association, I guess it has to do with, will he be a good fit for this team? And the other thing is this the time of year where you want to be messing with the parts of your team?
Well, I think if I'm Tony Parker and I'm Tim Duncan, I love the move because you're getting me an established guy who can come off the bench and take over a game if he needs to. So I love the fact they went out and got somebody, not some journeyman. They got a guy who can be a legitimate star to help them. So I think he'll be welcomed into the team. And Mac seems to be very excited about it. He said, whatever happens, I'm glad to be a part of it. It's something I've never experienced before, being with the best. So he knows he's being done a huge favor. And if McGrady does things the right way, it could lead him to a big contract next year somewhere else, if not in San Antonio.
When he played for Toronto, when he played for Houston, he was the man. So, I mean, he was the leader. He was the star player. So now they're just asking him to be a role player. So all indications are he's good with it. The Spurs obviously are good with it. Time will tell if this will gel.
I think it's a good move from the standpoint of they needed an infusion of some talent because they're struggling. They can't win road games right now. They've had a lot of injury issues. So Jackson gone, Diaw's been banged up. Ginobili's not going to be around for at least the first series. Parker's still a little banged up. And I think if McGrady is healthy, it gives him a lot of depth. It's going to help. Now, how many minutes will he get? How's that going to work into the rotation? That's up to Greg Popovich to figure out.
We're talking NBA basketball on the Odds Couple, KSHP AM 1400 radio, simulcast on Vegas Video Network, live and worldwide. Scott Pritchard, Pritchard's Picks, alongside Brett Grant. Let's talk about today is the last day of the regular season. A lot to be decided. A lot is undecided at this point. It's going to be very exciting. First of all, let's talk about the Western Conference. We know that the Oklahoma City Thunder, they're seeded one. Kevin Durant is going to pass and defer to Carmelo Anthony, basically giving him the crown as the leading scorer in all of basketball. I think it's the right move for Durant, knowing that they've solidified the top seed. It's about getting a little bit of rest before they start the playoffs this weekend.
I don't think the scoring title means nearly as much as it did 15 years ago, 10 years ago, even 5 years ago. Who cares? You know, I really don't. It's all about winning the championship. It's about holding that trophy up at the end of the year. And individual awards are nice, but it doesn't mean anything.
Well, let's take a look at the it just seems like yesterday. It's been 4, 5, 6 months, I guess, since November 1st when we had the first opening night for NBA basketball for this current season, where the Lakers were considered to be one of the favorites with Oklahoma City to not only win the West, but potentially win it all. And I remember opening night, they took on the Dallas Mavericks in LA and lost. The next night, they went to Portland and lost. And they, at this late date, based on lack of chemistry issues, if they win, they're in. Anything can happen once you're in. In fact, if they win, it's reasonable they'll be the seventh seed in the Western Conference. They're taking on the Houston Rockets tonight. Now, the Rockets have lost 3 of their last 5 games, and ATS against the spread, the Rockets are just 1-4. But this game, very important to both of these teams.
Yeah, well, and the Rockets are in regardless. So the only way Utah gets in is if the Lakers lose and Utah wins, then Utah takes that number 8 spot. But if the Lakers win tonight versus Houston, they are the 7th seed. There's no doubt about it. So the interesting thing is the Lakers will not be the 8th seed. They will be either out of the playoffs or the 7th seed, which means if they win, they play the San Antonio Spurs and not the Houston Rockets. So the Spurs, the great, gyrations that Greg Popovich was trying to create to play Houston, it can't happen now. Unless Houston wins tonight, then it can be that spot. But the Lakers, if they win, they're the 7th seed because they have the tiebreaker on Houston. If they lose, they could be out of the playoffs if the Jazz win.
Well, the Lakers have won.
I guess the Lakers can be in if Utah loses tonight.
Right. Okay. But chances are, in Utah, they're on the road taking on Memphis, and the Grizzlies are favored by 4.5. We'll talk about that a little bit later. But I do want to echo what you said, but also talk about how Greg Popovich, I think with the Spurs, they want to play the Lakers. I mean, yeah, they want to play Houston because it's a short road trip. I don't really think they care if it's 7 or 8 seed. But the Lakers, initially, maybe you wanted to avoid the Lakers, but all bets were off once Kobe Bryant went down. So now if you can catch the Lakers, an average team without their star player, bring it on. I mean, if I'm a Spurs fan, and I am, I'd love to play the Lakers in the first round.
That's a good point. You're right, because they're going to be wounded. We talked about yesterday that emotional lift that they came together and played very, very well in their last game, their first game without Kobe Bryant. My guess is they will still play pretty well tonight to get into the postseason. And then after that, I think you'll start to see the absence of Kobe taking on greater significance for the Lakers.
You know, I want to expand on that point, Brett, because in having a conversation with Tim Donaghy, former NBA official from 1994 to 2007, he told me specifically, as far as what he does from a sports betting standpoint, one of his 5 tips is to never bet against a team that has fired their coach. Because more times than not, when a coach is fired, it's because the players wanted him out. So even if you have an average team and you let the coach go, those players, and I see it in football. I remember just a couple of years ago, the Minnesota Vikings fired their coach, and they were a 14-point dog against the Eagles. They won the game straight up. Your players, and even when Sacramento Kings fired Paul Westphal a couple of years ago, Keith Smart, the coach, they played like they were on fire.
Right.
And so in this case, looking at the Lakers, okay, yes, Kobe Bryant out. Their first game back, because all we ever hear about with the Lakers is Kobe, Kobe, Kobe. So if you're playing for the Lakers, you're probably tired of hearing about it. It's like, hey, we're professional basketball players. Let us show the world what we can do without Kobe. And they beat the Spurs, okay? They were only, I mean, they were a three-and-a-half-point dog. It wasn't like it was a big, big upset. But still, defending your home court, playoff-type atmosphere, a must-win game, they responded favorably.
No, that's a good point. And I think, when you know, now the pressure is, here we are. They've had a couple days for the Kobe Bryant injury to sink in, a couple of practices in between their last games. Now Dwight Howard has all the pressure on him. And it's clearly on his shoulders. Nobody else that is a quote-unquote superstar. Yeah, a little bit of Paul Gasol. But Gasol's more of a very solid role player. I shouldn't call him a role player. He's a great player, but he's under the radar from a spotlight standpoint. Let's put it that way. Where Dwight Howard is, he's walking around, I'm Superman, right?
Right.
I'm Dwight Howard. I'm in the commercials. I'm Superman. So he wants that attention. Well, Dwight, guess what? You got it. So it'll be up to him to see what he can deliver. And he's going to have to step up his game. And the Hack of Howard syndrome that he's shaken him or been around with him his entire career, he's going to have to make free throws. He's going to be out there on that stage by himself on the line, and he's going to have to deliver from the foul line. Whether Houston does that tonight, I don't know. But you know the Spurs will do it to him in the playoffs in close games. They'll be doing it to him. That'll be a strategy for them. So Howard's going to have to deliver.
I don't think it's going to happen. I mean, he can deliver in the paint with those hook shots and offensive rebound putbacks, and he'll deliver rebounding the ball. But as far as making his free throws, it's going to hover around 50%. It is what it is. What I like about this Laker team is their front line. Dwight Howard and Pau Gasol, very good low post player.
Right, they're a very good rebounding team. I think they rank fourth in the league in rebounding. That's because the Lakers miss so many shots.
Well, that's a good point. Now, you look at Phil Jackson always used to say, no rebounding, no rings. And that's what concerns me about the LA Clippers. They're a good basketball team, but they're okay on the road, not great. The concern is they do not rebound the ball all that well. And the Miami Heat, as good as they are, they're one Achilles heel. They do not rebound as well as some of the other teams. But I look at the Laker team, and Pau Gasol had a tough game last time out shooting. But he had 16 points, three block shots. He was 1 for 10 in the first half shooting, so he struggled. But yet they won the game. The surprising part to me, Brett, was Steve Blake. Mm-hmm. Not a big fan. He's an average player.
Right.
But, man, he shot lights out. I just don't think they can sustain or count on him to be that consistently good shooting the ball.
Well, I think you're right. And the other part is when you know Steve Nash's health. That's the other factor because obviously you need that guy from a veteran leadership standpoint able to settle the ship. At least if Nash can get back on the floor and give them productive minutes, then you're going to have – you know, a little more of a stabilizing influence there of somebody who's been in this grind of the playoffs before and gone deep into the playoffs. Because right now, they don't have a lot of playoff experience, of good quality playoff experience. I mean, Gasol's been there, Howard's been there, but that's about it for what you would call good minutes in the postseason.
Big game, Staples Center tonight. The Lakers hosting the Houston Rockets. If the Lakers in, they're the seventh seed. If they lose, still an outside chance. They could be the eighth seed, depending upon what Utah does at Memphis. That game is played earlier in the day. Today, Memphis is favored by 4.5 points in that game. But looking at the Rockets taking on the Lakers, they played three times already this year. The Rockets actually have beaten them 2 out of 3. But the Lakers would have the tiebreaker if they win tonight 2-2 based on a better conference record. The Lakers are favored by 3.5 points, so they're a small favorite to win tonight's contest. The Rockets overall have beaten the Lakers 4 out of 5, and one player the last two games now has been hot for the Houston Rockets is Carlos Delfino. He's knocked down 10 three-pointers in the last two games.
Well, that's a team that loves to shoot the three. I mean, and they love to press, you know, love to push the basketball up the floor, but they're 16-24 on the road. And you wonder, and they lost at Houston the other night, or I'm sorry, at Phoenix the other night, and didn't play very well against a Phoenix team that's won 25 ball games all year. And Houston wouldn't be in this situation had they just won in Phoenix in a game that Phoenix just playing out the string. They can't wait for golf season to get
right out
of the way. So, I mean, if you're not motivated to win, you know, the Rockets kind of get what they deserve here. They're in a spot where they're going to go, we could have been in the number six hole and avoided both the Oklahoma City Thunder and the San Antonio Spurs and got a shot at Denver, a team that they might have been able to beat, quite frankly. But now, because they couldn't win at Phoenix, they unless Golden State loses tonight, they're going to be stuck in the 7 or 8 hole and have to face one of those teams. So Houston, they're a team I can't – they're fun to watch because they score a lot of points and they shoot a lot of threes, and Jeremy Lin has been terrific with them, and obviously the addition of James Harden. And then you mentioned Delfino. They've got some talented guys around that team. But they, like most in NBA, they don't play well on the road. So I expect the Lakers to win tonight.
Well, you look at the Lakers, too. The surprising part is this team offensively, they've really been coming on. I mean, for the year, they've averaged 102.2 points a game. But in their last few games, they've averaged over 106.5 points per contest. So offensively, they've been getting it done. They've won 7 of their last 8 games.
Well, and Houston averages 106 as well. The difference is Houston gives up about 102, 103 over the course of the season. And I'm sure that number on the road is a lot different than that number is at home going through. You know, the thing about the game tonight from a Rocket standpoint is how much they're in the playoffs. So whether they play Oklahoma City or whether they play the Spurs, is it a big difference to the Rockets? So how much motivation do they have in the game? Where the Lakers have to win the game tonight, and to me, that's enough motivation to say I like the Lakers tonight.
In the past, from a sports betting standpoint, when a team has to win, I love this in pro football, when a team's 8-8, or let's say they're 8-7, a game to go, or they're 9-6 with a game to go, they're basically an average team, and they have to win. The odds makers overinflate simply because the public will drive that number up. I always buck that trend because if you have to win, it tells me that you're an okay team but not a great team, and you can usually get more value taking the points. Points mean more than opinions. I do want to talk about, in the world of sports betting, this is a sports betting show, The Odds Couple, KSHP AM 1400 radio right here, Las Vegas, Nevada, simulcast on Vegas Video Network, Scott Pritchard alongside Brett Grant. You look at a team that's not even in the top 16 in the NBA that has been on fire ATS against the spread, the Detroit Pistons, a very nondescript average team on their best day, 7-0-1 ATS against the spread. I don't know what's going on with this team, but for the year, they've averaged 94.8 points a game, but in their last 8 games, they've averaged over 103 points a game.
They're like the anti-Portland Trailblazers right now,
right? One spectrum, one extreme other.
I think Portland thought the season ended on April 1st or March 15th. I don't know what happened with them. Yeah, I mean, Detroit's a team that's won 29 games this year, but they've won 4 in a row, as you mentioned, on fire against the spread, and given teams fits right now. And sometimes teams, once they get that pressure off and the – I'm not sure what's going on in that regard, but they've been playing well. They beat Philadelphia by 8 the other night. They play the Nets tonight. The Nets are solidly entrenched where they're going to be postseason-wise, right? So it wouldn't shock you to see them play the Nets pretty tough tonight in that spot, because the Nets are going to be the 4 seed no matter what. So the question is, how many players from the Nets are going to play tonight? And Detroit, a young ball club, playing hard down the stretch. So whatever the message was the coaching staff gave them down the stretch to play well, I'm sure management said, don't play well, better draft pick for us. What are we doing? Why didn't we play like this in December? But yeah, I'm not sure where it all came from for them.
Lakers Rockets tonight. Lakers small favorite. Steve Nash out again. Does it matter?
Probably not, because Steve Blake played so well the other day, and I think Steve Blake short-term can probably deliver and continue to do that kind of stuff for them short-term. So I don't think it's a big difference tonight necessarily. But I think in the playoffs, you need Steve Nash in the playoffs to have a chance to win a game or two.
We do field live chat questions, Odds Couple. I mean, we also have the studio line open if you want to dial in. 702-221-7283. That's 702-221-7283. Scott Pritchard alongside Brett Grant. And we're talking about, I want to segue now and talk a little bit about a famous broadcaster, loved by many, passed away, age 82, Pat Summerall, who his broadcast partners, Tom Brookshire back in the day, John Madden, and he last broadcast a game, I believe it was 2002, Pat Summerall, but the consummate professional, loved by everyone. If I'm not mistaken, I think he was involved in 16 Super Bowls from a broadcasting standpoint. The world will miss Pat Summerall.
Well, he was a guy, when you grow up where I did in St. Louis, and you watched or anywhere, and you're watching the NFL, and Pat Summerall was doing your game, which as a Cardinal fan in football wasn't very often. It meant it was the biggest game of the week. It was just that simple. When you had Summerall and Brookshire and then Summerall and Madden, you knew you got the best game that day. And a lot of times it was the Cowboys versus the Redskins or something like that. But you got the biggest game of the week, and he was terrific in that stage. And I think if you compare him now to what other broadcasters are doing – And, I grew up in the era where Jack Buck and the guys from a baseball standpoint, when you're listening to baseball on the radio, the great appeal to baseball was on the radio, obviously, is these broadcasters had the ability to create that image in your mind, where television is the exact opposite. I can see what's going on. So you need the understated guy. I don't need somebody screaming at me of what's going on. I can see what's going on. So when you have Pat Summerall understated, dropping back, and here's Staubach dropping back to throw left side, Pearson, touchdown. I mean, that's all he gave you, but it was perfect, and it was just the way it was. Then John Madden gave you the bing, bang, boom, bump, boom kind of stuff, and Summerall would be kind of like hosed him down over there. And you watched, like, the Super Bowl when Adam Vinatieri kicked the game-winning field goal to beat the Rams in what was probably the greatest upset next to maybe Joe Namath beating the Colts in Super Bowl history. His call was perfectly understated. It's right down the pipe. Adam Vinatieri, the Patriots win Super Bowl 36. Unbelievable. That's all he said. Now, if you ask Gus Johnson to make that call, it's up! It's on the way! It's gone! And that's what you get. And like, Gus, calm down. You right? And that's exactly the difference of the what the broadcasters should be and what they currently are going through. I loved listening to Pat Summerall. Now, he was a very good player. He played football at Arkansas, played for the Chicago Cardinals, played for the Giants, of course, kicked the big field goal that probably set up the great NFC or NFL title game with the Colts and the Giants back in the day. And then, of course, he was very good at the Masters. He was great at the U.S. Open Tennis Championship. He was a versatile guy and very, very good.
You talked about growing up in St. Louis in the 70s, and occasionally he would broadcast a Cardinal game, and I'm from the Midwest as well, not St. Louis, but I came here from Chicago back in 93 after being raised on a dairy farm in Iowa, left when I was 17. But I have to say
couldn't
that...
Couldn't leave any earlier?
Yeah, no doubt. But I'm trying to remember now in the 70s the players for the Cardinals. I remember Jim Hart, good quarterback. Oh, yeah. Terry Metcalf was a star running back, right?
Yeah, we had Jim Otis and Jim Bakken was our great kicker. And you
Roy
had Larry
Green,
Wilson.
Maybe?
Roy Green's a little bit later, but you had Deardorff and Banks and Conrad Dobler and Jackie Smith and Pat Tilley and Mel Gray. They had a terrific offensive team. That was the Eric Coryell days of the Cardinals. They just, unfortunately, were in the same division as the Dallas Cowboys, who
right.
were fantastic. And if it wasn't for them, the Washington Redskins were very good. Then Ron Jaworski came around with the Philadelphia Eagles. Never could get over that hump. But the Cardinals had terrific teams under Eric Coryell. And, of course, then he left and went to San Diego. And then you saw Dan Fouts and Kellen Winslow and Jefferson and all those guys going through. But it was fun. Unfortunately, we were in the toughest division you could possibly be in. And at that particular time, had we been in the Central Division, which the Cardinals probably should have been in, with the Lions, the Bears, and the Packers, those
you would have won your division every year.
Those teams weren't very good in those, right. in those years right. Going through. I mean, yeah, the Bears had Walter Payton, but they had very little else for quite a while. But that's the way it was. But it was fun to see those guys coming in to play.
Conrad Dobler for the St. Louis Cardinals, you mentioned him. I know he was advertised as the dirtiest player in the NFL. You buying it?
He was pretty nasty. That offensive line did a, but that was the way football was played back in that time.
It was a man's game.
It was. Now it's, you can't touch the quarterback. Give him a dress or a tutu. Put him on a, give him a pink jersey. That's Tom Brady. You can't touch him.
Two-hand touch below the waist. It's flag football today.
It's getting to be that way, isn't it? I understand the safety concerns that go along with it, but, listening to Summerall, and then, of course, when he was at CBS, he left because CBS lost the NFL. So the only reason he left and went to Fox was because he was a great NFL announcer. So he left CBS and went to Fox with the intention, under Pat Summerall, that he would still work for CBS doing the Masters and doing the U.S. Open. CBS said, no. They didn't like the fact that he left and went and did the NFL on Fox, but CBS lost the NFL to Fox. So what's a guy to do? He's a football broadcaster.
I loved Pat Summerall, consummate professional, understated, I think was your word, and I couldn't agree more. His broadcast partners, Tom Brookshire, I liked him very much. Not a big John Madden fan. John Madden, one of my least favorite broadcasters on the planet. So annoyed listening to him talk about if I had to hear him say one more time that one knee equals 2 feet, I was just going to mute the TV. This right. guy would overstate the obvious, and he's talking to you like you're 5 years old, like you've never watched a football game before.
Right, but I could see where people didn't like him, and to me, I like the entertainment aspect of it because I think he made the game fun. And if you were a casual fan, You know, Madden could have fun with it. But and you also got the insight a little bit about a guy who was a terrific coach, John Madden was, who probably could have coached for another 20 years, but his fear of traveling by planes and various other reasons, he guess got burnt out with it. He was a very underrated coach.
I thought he was a very
for a long time.
I thought he was a very overrated coach.
You think so?
He won one Super Bowl and then he stepped down. But I think, I mean, that Raider team. Come on, the Raiders in the 70s could never beat the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Right.
And he had talent. I mean, Clarence Davis, Mark Van Egan, along with Kenny Stabler,
Dave Casper, and you know,
and George Atkinson, Jack Tatum,
sure.
George Hendricks. These guys were studs, offensively, defensively. He had more talent.
Branch
than anybody.
Yeah,
exactly. He had more talent than anyone, and yet he could never get past the Steelers. One time he did, he won one Super Bowl. And, of course, hey, that's one more Super Bowl win than a lot of coaches have. But
right.
So I thought he was a good coach, but not great.
If there was replay and the immaculate reception, he might have had a second one.
Well, and, of course, the Steelers
would
lost.
Would that play have counted? In today's NFL.
How is it that we don't
I'm
have a clear
asking.
Well, how is it we don't actually have a clear videotape of the Immaculate Reception back in 71, 72 when the Steelers played the Raiders?
Right.
It was the first round playoff game. It wasn't like it was the AFC Conference Championship game.
Right.
So who's to say, had the Raiders won, that they would have won the next
That's
week before going to the Super Bowl?
Right.
My bet would be no, because I believe the Dolphins were dominating the NFL during that time,
That's
early 70s.
Yeah, that was Don Shula's.
Right.
Years.
That's
Era. A good point.
Right.
But yeah, there never really is a great, perfect view of that. So you can't dispute the call. I just wonder if it had happened today, I'm sure it wouldn't have counted.
I look at Chuck Knoll, and Chuck Knoll was never a media darling. He was not all that popular. I love Chuck Knoll because he kind of reminds me of Greg Popovich. I mean, he never referred to Franco Harris as Franco Harris. He referred to him as number 32.
Right.
Because to him, you're just a number. The organization, the Steelers, bigger than you as an individual player. And Chuck Knoll kicked John Madden's butt each and every time they played.
No, and the Steelers obviously had a terrific team with that steel curtain defense and then their ability to run the football, and Bradshaw managed the games beautifully. And you know, people talk about a guy who doesn't get enough credit is Terry Bradshaw. When it comes to the great quarterbacks of all time, there aren't too many guys with more rings than Terry Bradshaw. And you're saying, well, there's a reason why he has the rings. He was certainly a great general when it came to leading his team. And if they wanted to throw, he could certainly chuck it as well as anybody could. But that wasn't what the Steelers did. They were a ball control team. They had a great running back. They had a great defense. So their quarterback didn't have to be this guy that was out throwing the ball like crazy, like a Dan Marino type or somebody like that back in the day.
Well, Terry Bradshaw, number one pick of the Pittsburgh Steelers back in 69, I believe, from Louisiana Tech, he really struggled early. It's when they started building the team with Jack Lambert, Jack Ham, Andy Russell, Dick Anderson on defense, and then, of course, Rocky Blyer, along with Franco Harris, Lynn Swan, John Stallworth, all these guys, Benny Cunningham, and they're a very good offensive line. Mike Webster was their starting center.
You know, Green and you know, all the other guys on the defensive line, obviously.
Ernie Holmes, L.C. Greenwood, the Steel Curtain. So this team, I remember, I believe it was 74 when they knocked off the Minnesota Vikings 16-6. But, I mean, Chuck Foreman and Fran Tarkington, led by Bud Grant,
their coach. Another great coach, Bud Grant.
That had a tough time winning. I mean, they never won the Super Bowl.
Well, he could never get his guy to run the right direction.
Yeah, that was Jim Marshall.
Jim, we're going this way.
He scored a touchdown going the wrong way, Marshall, they called
exactly.
him, I think. Minnesota Vikings. Wow, we're
we're
taking a stroll down memory
lane. That's the one
lane.
Thing about the NFL is it doesn't and why the NFL in today's America is the number one sport, because here we are on April the 17th talking about the NFL, talking about stuff from 40 years ago in the NFL. We have a draft coming up next week, which will be kind of fun to talk about as it gets closer, and how it might affect teams' win totals for the season. I noticed from a gambling standpoint, when it comes to win totals, the win totals are up pretty much already for the NFL, or not until after the draft?
Well, actually, what you have, they will
the
announce
odds for the Super Bowl.
The odds for the Super Bowl, and some places have conference odds, but what you have Thursday, okay, tomorrow the NFL is going to announce the schedule.
Right.
We already have the opponents. The opponents were announced in December. Actually, December.
Right.
It used to be this time of year, but now the opponent's schedule comes out in December. But as far as when you play them, and Bud Grant coach of the Vikings back in the 70s, used to say, it's not who you play, it's when do you play them. But we have some interesting matchups for sure. I mean, the 49ers, I'm going on memory, are taking on the Atlanta Falcons in San Francisco, NFC Conference rematch. The Patriots are in Baltimore. Denver goes to New England. I mean, New England goes to Baltimore. They've been to the last two AFC Conference Championship games. Denver travels to New England. It's just a matter of, well, Baltimore, the team that won the Super Bowl this year, they're going to open on the road. Usually they showcase the team that won it. They showcase the team that won the Super Bowl on Thursday night to kick off the season at home. But because the Ravens won, the Baltimore Orioles are playing Thursday night, Camden Yards, or in Baltimore. So it's conflict of interest, and he would not reschedule one baseball game to accommodate the Super Bowl champion Ravens.
Well, they share the same parking lot, and Peter Angelos is well, say no more about Peter Angelos. How do you not say, sure, we'll play in the afternoon that day or whatever, so you guys can have the spotlight at night? He refused to make that move, so now the Ravens won't get that exposure. And usually it's the previous Super Bowl matchup, right? A lot of times it'll be the opening game of the season. I don't know, is it San Francisco and the Ravens, or who it's going to be now opening up. But we'll find that out tomorrow and be able to look at the schedule.
Well, the point is, the Ravens, instead of opening up at home, having won the Super Bowl, they're going to be on the road on the opening first game on a Thursday night. So we'll find out tomorrow what the schedule will be like.
We don't know who they're playing yet, do we?
No, we do not.
Okay.
So we'll know tomorrow. So stay tuned. We'll have it right here, hopefully, if they announce it before we take to the airwaves. We're going to go now with Spin to Win. Bring in the wheel. Spin to Win. This is about, we're focusing in on one game, one time. The Memphis Grizzlies are at home, and they're taking on the Utah Jazz. Memphis favored by 4.5. This is the last game of the regular season, but we do this Spin to Win because successful sports bettors know that you always bet and you think with your head as opposed to your heart. Emotions cloud judgment. So I'm going to spin to win, and whatever team it lands on, I am forced to argue why this team would be a good bet ATS against the spread. Brett automatically has to take the opposite side. The idea here is to, you should be able to make an argument and understand why the point spread is there. The sportsbooks put the point spread there to present a 50-50 proposition. They take 10% of the losses. Let's see what we have. The Memphis Grizzlies hosting the Utah Jazz. I guess I have the Memphis Grizzlies. I'll take it. I love teams that play defense. I'm not a big favorite guy. I generally take the points. In this case, though, the Memphis Grizzlies -4.5. It seems a bit cheap. I think the Utah Jazz, as good as they are, they're getting too much respect, because I've often said you can stop the music, but you can't stop the Jazz. You can stop the Jazz when they're on the road. They 11-12 wins all year on the road, 28-29 losses on the road. They're a good home team. They struggle on the road. Memphis Grizzlies, they play great, tenacious half-court defense. This team is built for the postseason because it's a knockdown, drag-out half-court set. They love to play in mud. Zach Randolph is a stud. He's the number one guy offensive rebounding in the league. Mark Gasol, very good player. I love Mike Connolly, the lefty. Bayless is a good guard coming off the bench. This is a talented team, and who can forget Tony Allen, their defensive stalwart? So the Memphis Grizzlies at home, -4.5. It's cheap. Ring the ringer and see the cashier.
That sort of kind of worked almost there, didn't it?
Almost. It's getting better.
Well, I got to go on the other side. Don't underestimate us. We actually won 13 games on the year, by golly. We forgot we won at Minnesota the other day. We've won two in a row in that regard, have the Utah Jazz. Al Jefferson, obviously the key for them. Mo Williams and Paul Millsap and those guys have got to come out and play their hearts out tonight. And they got to play the game of the season because this is their season. If they don't win, they are done. If they win, they still might be done, but they still have to win the game tonight. And I understand your point that sometimes if you have to win, it's not necessarily it's the added pressure going in. This is a Jazz team that also plays pretty good defense. So I look for a lower scoring game tonight, and that might help the Jazz from the standpoint of a game that's played in mud. They like that style going through. And I think it might be an advantage for them as well because of the fact they don't have to worry about chasing. They're a very good half-court set offensive team, and we know Memphis takes their time as well on the offensive end of the floor. So I look for a lower-scoring game, and when usually a lower-scoring game is also means a closer game. And I think the Jazz will be in there late in that game with a chance to win it. So I'll take the points with the Utah Jazz.
These two teams, Utah-Memphis, they mirror one another, don't they?
They do a lot. Very similar. I think you're right. And there aren't a lot of teams in the Western Conference that hold the opponents below 100 points. Well, the Jazz and the Grizzlies are two of those. I think there's only four or five teams that do it. They're two of the five that do it in that spot. And obviously, you know, they're not great in any one aspect. They're 13th overall in scoring. They're 15th in rebounds. They're 13th in assists. They're 16th in points allowed. They're a middle-of-the-road team. But they're capable of rising up and winning a game they need to win it. Now, Memphis is a little motivated still. They're same record as the Clippers tonight. So if Memphis wins, they could move up a slot on the Clippers and get home court advantage. Otherwise, they're going to be in that five hole and have to play on the road. So it's an important game as well for Memphis.
It's a very important game for the Grizzlies, and they do play early. The concern you have here with Memphis, their bench, they just don't have a bench. I love their coach. I love their starting five. I like the fact that they play defense. Utah, same thing. They bring it every night. They just struggle on the road. And I guess when you get away from Salt Lake City where you have the high elevation, thin air, high altitude, I mean, it bodes well at home, but it adversely affects your lungs and your team when you're on the road.
Well, plus you're in Memphis. Everybody smokes in Memphis. You know, it's just
maybe that's it.
It's an unhealthy city.
You're listening to The Odds Couple on KSHP AM 1400 Radio, beautiful Las Vegas, Nevada. My name is Scott Pritchard, PritchardsPicks.com, alongside Brett Grant. This show is simulcast Monday through Friday from 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. Las Vegas time on Vegas Video Network. That's right, we're live and worldwide. We're going to take a break. We'll come right back. Stay tuned.
Have you ever thought you should be on the radio? Or have you considered doing an online video show or podcast? If so, now is your only chance to do both at the same time. KSHP and the Vegas Video Network have teamed up to provide the only multi-camera broadcast quality video and live radio simulcast in Las Vegas. And instead of having your show played at some ungodly hour, the KSHP Vegas Video Network partnership is producing shows that play from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. Monday through Friday. Imagine having your own radio show broadcasting to the entire Las Vegas Valley, and combine that with an online presence that is viewed in all 50 states and 150 countries, both live and on demand. This is a first and an outstanding opportunity to give voice to your business, your ideas, and your talent. If you'd like your own show on KSHP and the Vegas Video Network, contact us today at 221-1200. That's 221-1200.
Welcome back to The Odds Couple on the world-famous Vegas Video Network, simulcast on KSHP AM 1400 Radio. Keep those live chat questions coming. Also, the studio line is 702-221-7283. If you want to talk sports, namely sports betting, 702-221-7283. Also, reach out to us. Email us at oddscouple@vegasvideonetwork.com. That's oddscouple@vegasvideonetwork.com. Also, we would love for your voice to be on our show. Simply go to our site, Vegas Video Network. On the right-hand side, there is a red bar. Click there. In the middle of the page, a green bar. Hit Start Recording. I mentioned live chat questions earlier. Do that through Vegas Video Network. If you do miss us live, no worries. Check us out. Vegas Video Network, iTunes, YouTube.com, Roku. We're here Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. Las Vegas time. Are you kidding me?
My turn. I get to do it first. I got a little frustration. This is, of course, with college football. The University of Oregon Ducks have acknowledged major NCAA rules violations with their football program, and they've self-imposed a two-year probation. Includes a couple of major violations, along with maybe one of those being paying $25,000 to a player based out of a Houston scouting service going through. And my biggest issue with it is not that they're cheating, because the rule book is about the size of the Encyclopedia Britannica back in the day, and it's almost impossible to follow all the rules that they have with regards to the NCAA. But Chip Kelly, the now former coach of the Oregon Ducks, has once again, like many of these coaches do, they escape any possible punishment, just like Pete Carroll did when he left USC to skedaddle into the NFL just a couple of years ago. Chip Kelly's doing the same thing. He's skedaddling Oregon at just the right time, got a huge payday. He goes to the Philadelphia Eagles where he'll suffer no penalties, while meanwhile the kids who've done nothing wrong are the ones that suffer. They'll lose scholarships. The kids won't necessarily. The school will lose scholarships and TV revenue. The kids will more than likely be missing a bowl season, a potential playoff spot, because Oregon's very, very good. We have a playoff starting the following year. Now, the NCAA has not agreed with Oregon's self-imposed penalties, so that means the NCAA is going to put on their full investigation. They got enough problems of their own when it comes to the hypocrisy of the NCAA, but they're more than likely going to lower the hammer on Oregon with additional sanctions, which could include bowl violations or no bowl appearances, television appearances, and the possibility of missing a first ever postseason. And again, the thing that bothers me the most about this is these coaches, whether it's guys like Kelvin Sampson at Oklahoma or Pete Carroll a couple of years ago, and now Chip Kelly, they leave at just the right time where these kids are left holding the bag. Are you kidding me? To these adults.
And these kids have committed to the university, and the coach in recruiting had a lot to do with it, but like comedy, timing is everything.
That's a good point. They knew that the knock on the door was bad news, and it was time for them to get out. And we thought Chip Kelly wasn't going to take the job initially with Philadelphia, and then I guess he might have got some more information going, Chip, you better take the job.
Better go now.
Now was the time to go. Good time to go.
You know, some of these coaches, I mean, I admire and respect most of them, but I think some coaches at the highest level are a little bit in denial, a little bit out of touch with reality. I remember the former UConn basketball coach, Jim Calhoun, one of my favorite people, one of my favorite right. coaches. But when they were popped with big-time sanctions, NCAA infractions for cheating, he called the news conference. And Jim Calhoun, in his news conference, said, listen, I might have broken a few rules, but I did not cheat. Are you kidding me?
I tried that with my teacher in sixth grade. Didn't work. You know, I remember when UConn won the national championship when they had Thabeet, the big center, and where they played Purdue in one of the regional semifinal games in Phoenix, and Missouri beat John Calipari and Tyreek Evans' Memphis Tigers. And we were at that game as a Missouri fan. They went down to Phoenix, took my sons down to watch the game. So the first game was over, and the way the arenas, if you've never been to an NCAA tournament game, when the first game's over, all the fans from the first game pretty much leave. And all the fans for the second game go, hey, look at all the open seats down there. We're rushing down. So we went down and we sat maybe five, six rows off the court watching the game. And here come the UConn kids about halftime out of their press conferences and out of the locker room getting cleaned up. And they're saying hi to their families and girlfriends. And here comes Hakeem Thabeet, who's like 9 feet tall. And my kids are midgets. And I'm looking at him and realizing he's a poor college kid, right? He's a kid who I think came from Africa to play college basketball at UConn. And he had... You know, I've got a job. I make good money. I own the radio station, right? I do all right. He's got the most expensive pair of earrings I've ever seen in my life in his ears. And I'm thinking, I wonder who paid for those. And, you know, back in the late 1980s, when Illinois, the Flying Illini, Kenny Norman and the Illini went to the Final Four in 1989, I remember I went to college in Illinois as well, and we were traveling to the University of Illinois to see some friends. And I remember at a gas station, I stopped at a gas station getting gas in my car, and I'm 21 years old. Here comes a member of the Illinois basketball team. Not going to say who it was. It wasn't Kenny Norman from West Aurora High School, by the
right
way.
Right on, right.
But it was somebody else on that team driving a $70,000 Mercedes-Benz. You're going, nice.
Yeah, and this was an 89.
We're both taking chemistry classes. Right? What? So cheating's been going on forever. And the question is, the NCAA, no way, no how can they handle all these schools, 300-plus Division I basketball programs, another 115 or so Division I college football programs, and then, of course, you've got the lower-level football programs. They can't possibly police all of that. So you either make it easier for them to cheat or not worry about it so much, or you only hammer on the guys that are doing the most egregious of things going through. Obviously, Bruce Pearl, who was the coach at Tennessee, was in Iowa. He's the one who informed the NCAA about Lou Henson and the Fighting Illini and their recruiting violations. Bruce Pearl was basically ostracized from basketball coaching for a long time by his coaching brethren. He eventually got a job at Tennessee. So even if you're trying to be a good guy and keep the sport clean, you're being ostracized for being a narc going through. So what do you do?
I know what you say is true. But again, once you get caught with your hand in the cookie jar, do you man up and say, hey, you know what? We made some mistakes. Instead, Calhoun's defiant.
Right.
He says, listen, I might have broken a few rules. I did not cheat. I thought that's what cheating was.
Exactly.
Well, I want to talk now a little bit about baseball. Are you kidding me? Atlanta Braves? Wow. Everyone talked, well, me specifically, and I'm everyone, right? I felt
in your own world, yes.
Right, I'm a legend in my own mind. The Washington Nationals, on paper, and they're going to be there in the end, but right now in the American League East, they're not even the best team in their division, thanks to the Atlanta Braves. Now, we knew the Atlanta Braves would be a very good team. They are every year winning, great tradition there in Atlanta. The Braves, wow, jacked 5 home runs yesterday. This team has won 10 consecutive games. They played 13 games. They've won 12 of the 13, but what's impressive, in checking my notes, this team is number one in earned run average, 1.83 as a team. They're also number one whip, walks, hits per innings pitch at a very conservative 1.01. Earned runs, they've only yielded 24 earned runs the entire season in 13 games. They're number one in opponents' batting average of 204. And then this is where it gets interesting for me. As a sports bettor, if you blindly just bet the Braves, now granted they've been a favorite in most of their games, but blindly betting the Braves, money line, plus or minus, a conservative $100 bettor is up almost $900. So a dime player, a $1,000 player is up $9,000 just less than 2 weeks into the season. So the Atlanta Braves, are you kidding me?
Well, they're losing currently 1-0 to Kansas City in the seventh inning, an early game today. But are you kidding me? First of all, this is the Atlanta Braves. They can win all the games they want in April, May, June, July, but they don't win in October, and it's early. And by the way, they 6 of those games were against the Miami Marlins. So let's temper our enthusiasm just a little bit. I agree. I think the Braves are going to be a very good team. They were a playoff team a year ago. They're getting solid pitching right now. But the early schedule has certainly been in their favor. Right now they're in the midst of a series with the Kansas City Royals who are playing well for the Kansas City Royals to start the season. But their opening series have been Miami. They did sweep Washington, Miami, and now Kansas City. So they haven't been playing the best of the best just yet going through. And it's always been easy for the Braves to win games in April. Their problem is that even when they won those with Bobby Cox and as at the helm, and you had Greg Maddux and John Smoltz and John Avery, and you had the terrific pitching duo with Tom Glavin, that wonderful quad of guys, they still only won one championship with all those 12 straight divisional titles, one title out of that whole thing.
I believe that was in 96 when they did finally get through and win. But we're talking about a team, you mentioned you kind of glazed over it, but yeah, it's been favorable for them, but they did go to Washington
right,
and swept the Nationals.
They did, and that was a very impressive series. I'll give them all the credit in the world for that going through. And Washington, 8-6, you know, they're probably playing a little bit under where we expect them to be right now in the season because a couple of guys aren't hitting. I mean, Bryce Harper's having a great start to his season, but Ryan Zimmerman really not hitting well. The powerful third baseman for the Nationals hasn't really started yet. And you would expect the Uptons to come through and get it started. They did lose Freddie Freeman to an injury. He's on the disabled list. But obviously, they're getting great help in other spots going through. Hayward's been terrific for them. They're getting their great pitching going through. I want to see what they do when they face the teams that we expect to be good. Let's play the Giants. Let's play the Cardinals. Let's play the Dodgers. Let's play the Reds. Let's see how we do in those series.
That's what I love about baseball is generally the better team is rewarded because you play over the course of 162 games. If you haven't figured it out by then,
right.
It's like Major League Baseball, though, sees it differently. It's like, okay, we'll play 162 games, and then if we have a tie, we'll play a one-game playoff, one and done. It's like, wow, let's be in a hurry all of a sudden.
And then you'll have a controversial call, like an infield fly rule, 40 yards behind infield last year, that was called the infield fly rule, and the Braves lose the game to the Cardinals. Now, as a Cardinal fan, I thought it was a terrific call by the umpire, but that's beside the point. No question that Pete Cosmos camped under that ball for a long time. That was a very ordinary play, wasn't it? That's all it is. The people seem to think when it comes to the infield fly, which is about as confusing as the tuck rule was in football, the infield fly rule is, and it doesn't have to be, the ball doesn't have to be on the infield.
So. You know, we've talked about the Atlanta Braves in the National League, the fact that they're off to a very good start, 12-1, 10 consecutive wins, first in so many categories. But let's slide on over and talk about the American League, the Oakland A's. When you think of Oakland, we know it's a pitcher-friendly park, so much foul territory that it lends itself, it's a pitcher-friendly park. Yet the A's, 15 games, 12 of their 15 games have gone Red Rover, over the closing totals.
Right.
The Oakland A's are number one in baseball, 20 home runs. They're first in doubles and total bases. Are you kidding me?
No, they've been terrific. And when you look at what they've been doing, the way they've been doing it, I've been very impressed. You know, Seth Smith's been terrific. Lowry. I mean, how many people have I don't think of Jed Lowry as a power-hitting guy, especially as my shortstop. He's batting cleanup for this team. I mean, Donaldson and Reddick and Young and Jaso at the top of the order, they've been just terrific, and they're getting great pitching. Although today Bartolo Colon is back. It'll be interesting to see what he does. But he's pitched already earlier this year. But he's one of those guys that had the 50-game suspension for steroids, and we all went, duh. But you know, the A's have been great, and everybody had a lot of pressure on the Angels, of course, and the Rangers still. But the A's, they're a fun team to watch. Fun team to watch.
We're having a great time on the Odds Couple, KSHP AM 1400 Radio, Las Vegas, Nevada, simulcast on Vegas Video Network. Scott Pritchard, PritchardsPicks.com, alongside Brett Grant, GM here at the radio station. This is the part of the show where we put money into your pocket as Brett and I put you on the right side.
Well, I'm going to go first, and I did have a winner yesterday. Do you want to recap yesterday or not?
Yes, always recap what you did the day before.
I won. Scott didn't. That's all that matters.
On second thought.
Exactly. We had the I gave out the over in the Brewers and Giants game. It went flying over the total, and we were very happy about the fact that that game went over. Today I'm going to give you the late game, so everybody's got plenty of time to go out and find the game. Padres and Dodgers, a 7-10 start. Clayton Kershaw on the mound today. He's 2-1 on the year, an ERA of 1.16. Take on Ross for the Padres. The interesting thing about this particular thing, Tyson Ross, I should say, the Padres have won four games this year. Four. Three of
how
them.
How did they win four?
Three of them against the Dodgers.
That's surprising.
Three of them against the Dodgers. Although they're not going to win tonight. Clayton Kershaw is the one guy in that Dodger rotation, the one guy on the Dodgers. Of any of the 25 guys in the rotation, who do I trust? I put my trust in Clayton Kershaw. So he's a huge favorite tonight, but I'm going to take the run line. This is a Dodger win, 5-0, 5-1, 4-1. I don't see the Padres, who've been swinging the bats very well against the Dodgers, had a big day yesterday and the day before, scoring lots of runs. I don't see that happening tonight. Kershaw shuts them down. Dodgers avoid the sweep to the lowly Padres and win by more than two runs tonight.
All right. You heard it here first on KSHP AM 1400 Radio and Vegas Video Network. My right side, before we get to it, well, Brett already spoiled it. I mean, yeah, I lost yesterday. Been having a very good basketball, baseball season, but yesterday my total fell out. I liked under 10.5. It wasn't close. It went extra innings and lost, but it would have, I think it was, I was toast in the sixth inning. So it happens. Today's a new day. I like a baseball game on the West Coast, Seattle Mariners hosting the Detroit Tigers. Interesting pitching matchup here. Scherzer for the Tigers, strikeout pitcher taking on the star, man. I love this guy, Hernandez. His ERA, or actually his whip is 1.16, but Scherzer is right there at 1.18. So these guys are the real deal when it comes to big-time pitching. The concern for the Tigers, their bullpen. But I look at the total for this game. It's 7, okay? I really see value. You have to shade the under with some extra juice, 15 cents, 20 cents. But my right side, Tigers-Mariners tonight, under the 7. Ring the ringer. See the cashier.
I agree with you. I mean, you got two guys, and Max Scherzer, I think, is ready for a breakout year himself. He's a very good pitcher, University of Missouri product, and he's a guy who certainly can strike guys out. And if Felix Hernandez is on, the Tigers are going to have a hard time scoring runs on him. So I think you're right, a very low-scoring, kind of a 3-1, 3-2 kind of game up there in the Great Northwest tonight.
Exciting time to be a sports bettor. I think any time's an exciting time to be a sports bettor. We're in the gambling capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada. This show, The Odds Couple, can be heard live and worldwide Monday to Friday from 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. Las Vegas time and simulcast on Vegas Video Network. So we encourage you to keep the live chat questions coming every day, and also the studio line 702-221-7283. We broadcast the Clippers, the Dodgers, BYU, and Dallas Cowboy football. We'll see you tomorrow.